powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Boy, I'm out one day and these kids just change everything up on me.
What are you talking about?
They come up with this master plan, which, by the way, is a very good one.
It's a good one.
Yeah, for the rest of the offseason, we're going to announce our intentions. You hear me, Curtis? We're going to announce our intentions.
I'm sorry, what?
Okay, here's...
Wait, what?
Here's where we are, all right? The Seahawks went 11-5, got to the second round of the playoffs again. It didn't even make the conference championship, much less the Super Bowl. But the question that everybody is asking is this. How do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020? That's the most obvious question you can ask, and that's the question that our show is going to be asking all season long. Now, we're going to be answering this question in different ways as we go forward. There's a couple of different points on the calendar that I think affect the way that we answer this question. One, Seattle's free agents. How do they deal with that? NFL free agents. How do they negotiate their way through that part of the calendar? And then, of course, the draft, the lead up, and then the after, I'll call it the after effects of the draft. Who did they end up getting and why? So leading up to each one of these, this is the important part. We're going to be providing profiles of everyone involved. Seahawks free agents, NFL free agents, draft prospects, you name it. We're going to be doing that every single day at 2 o'clock. These are everybody that we think can help the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl.
And we're going to have really cool kind of extra parts of this where Jake is going to be spearheading a lot of the prospects, the outlook on things to give you guys all the information you need, kind of break down how they fit or maybe don't fit into the Seahawks team. It all leads back to that question of can this person help the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl? We're also going to have digital assets for 710sports.com where we're going to have a video either me or either of you guys break down some of that stuff too. And finally, one of the interesting things about this is the three of us and Big Kyle, our producer, started kind of debating this behind the scenes in Kyle's office where we do our show prep every day. And we were talking about, okay, well, how do the Seahawks get back? What matters to you? What do you think is important? And after a while, we thought, wait a minute, why don't we have the start of the conversation on air?
And a big part of that is because we want you guys involved. You as the listeners, we want you involved in this process with us every step of the way. In terms of coming down and breaking down Seahawks free agents and who to retain, who to let go, who is the best free agent acquisitions that they could make, and in terms of draft prospects, we want you guys to be very much a part of this with us as we go through this. This is going to be an ever-changing deal. Stacy and I, we barely kind of talked about it yesterday. Stacy came in hard that she was going to be a defensive-minded person in terms of free agent acquisitions and capital. And towards the end of the day, she changed her mind.
Well,
so we may change our minds, you know, all three of us, as we go through this process, as we think it out. But that's why we want to do this on the air instead of having this, you know, scripted out. And I think that this is going to be a really fun discussion because there's so much up in the air. There's so much draft capital for this team. There is really good free agent. They're in great cap space, great draft capital, and also there's some questions about this team in terms of philosophy and how do they get themselves back to the Super Bowl when it's all said and done.
You know, every time I change my mind, and every year when we examine these different points on the calendar, I change my mind. I won't say daily, but often enough.
Frequent.
It makes me
I would say you're open-minded.
But too open-minded. The point I'm trying to make is that it makes me admire guys like Pete and John. You have to have some conviction. If you're Jerry DePoto or whoever, you have to believe in something at some point and not always go for the next carrot that's dangled right in front of you just because it looks a little bit better than what you've committed to. You have to commit to something and see it all the way down its path. Now, that said, John and Pete have been around for a long time now, right? They've been here a long time, and they've applied their philosophy every single year, mm-hmm. and it's largely gone unchanged. Part of the conversation this year, at least for me, is going to be, okay, is this the year that maybe things need to be altered a little bit? And I'm not talking about should we throw the ball more. I'm talking about when we look at the draft, should draft philosophy be altered a little bit from what they normally do because they've missed so much mm-hmm. in the last couple of years. They've missed on guys that they haven't drafted, and they've missed on guys that they have drafted that have come here and either been hurt or they haven't done anything to contribute.
And I want to back that statement up because I think initially when people hear you say that, Tom, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? The last two drafts have actually been pretty good. In terms of percentages, all these guys have made the roster and they've contributed. We're not talking about contributors. We're talking about frontline, star-studded impact players that can actually make a difference. And your first round track record has not been great.
Right.
Your top of the end draft picks have not been great over the last few years. And I think that that is something that they can't afford to miss out on in terms of this upcoming draft and this upcoming
just
year.
Just as an example, changing your draft philosophy, how about we don't rely so much on finding diamonds in the rough in the fifth and sixth rounds just because we have like 18 fifth round picks? How about we get one or two impact guys at the top?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they're not picking top five, so you know Chase Young is out of the question. I get that. I mean, who knows? Maybe they end up trading up, but probably not that high. But getting an impact player somewhere at the top as opposed to trade down, more bites at the apple, that would be a huge shift in draft philosophy. But who knows? Maybe that's what answers this question. How do you get back to the Super Bowl?
Right. And I think for just going on that part of it real quick is I would anticipate, Tom, and this may infuriate you and this may blow up what you know Jim Moore wrote up a couple weeks ago, but I would say that the Seahawks are more likely to trade down, and it's not that big of a thing to say because you know the past 8 years have shown that they're going to do that. But don't trade down so that you're giving up to the point where you're in the fourth and fifth round. Trade down to the point where you have 3 second-round picks. Okay,
sure.
You've got 3 second-round picks. You can acquire great talent. You can acquire great talent in the second and third rounds, and I think that that is a
reasonable
thing to
ask. Yeah, it doesn't have to be first round.
Ask.
I want to be clear. It doesn't have to be, hey, we're trading up and we're going to get a new quarterback. I agree. You can find plenty of great talent there in the second round. But that would be a little departure from what they've done in the past.
Yeah,
traded down to get like lower in the lower rounds, not necessarily the second round. But this, I'm just giving an example of the type of conversation we're going to have.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of been part of their strategy too, to build up some of that talent, which they already have. But we're still going to get back to that question. And just to kind of a peek behind the curtain for you guys is, you know, Jake was bringing up the idea of team speed. And it was something that Brock was saying the Seahawks need to do. They need to be fast. They need to be a fast team, like the Kansas City Chiefs are fast. And so we were debating, well, do you think they'll do that? And kind of predicting whether or not we think they will. And the question isn't necessarily whether they think they'll do it. It's, can they get back to a Super Bowl if they don't? If you don't think they're going to do it, okay, can they make a Super Bowl? Yeah, I think they, and this was Jake's opinion, is, and we'll dig into this more in the future, but I don't think they need X, Y, and Z to get to a Super Bowl. I do think they need this. And so we'll always come back to that question. And just as an extra point, Tom already mentioned this, but we're going to have those segments at 2 p.m. And we're kind of going to kick it off today at 2 p.m., right, by taking calls from you guys and getting that conversation started again. But we're going to start with free agency, Seahawks free agency, on April 7th at 2 p.m. That's going to be our first profile.
I was going to say, I didn't come ready with my profile today.
No, you don't need it today. You don't need it today. But today at 2 p.m., we're going to revisit our conversation, talk about kind of the three key things that each of us feel like they absolutely need to do to get back to a Super Bowl in 2020. And we'll also be taking your calls.
And those three things, let's dive into that. I mean, For me personally, right off the bat, I think that we're going to be very aligned in this, just as a guess. But number one to me is pass rush.
Yeah.
I think pass rush has to be your number one priority if you're the Seattle Seahawks. And you look at the defense, you look at the linebackers, you look at the secondary, and you can say absolutely that there could be improvement in those areas. But pass rush solves a lot of those issues.
If pass rush isn't your number one thing, I need to hear you call in it too and tell me why it's not, because all three of us were on board with that.
Wait a minute. I don't want to be like on board.
Tom, just admit that you're one of us right now.
Tom, I know that you want to be different.
I know you want to go rogue, but in this case, you were just another one of us.
I think the holder, the long snapper is the problem here.
No.
Get out of here, Tom.
I mean,
that caused all kinds of problems last year.
Well, three albums.
You know, having kicker help and having a good guy there would definitely put a lot of people at ease, but solidifying that defensive line has got to be your first priority, and particularly the pass rush. It makes everybody on that defense better in terms of pass defense and coverage, and obviously, you know, shoring up that running game. The defensive running game is a major problem. The second thing
before we move beyond the pass rush, the extent to which they need to invest in pass rush, though, we can debate that all day.
Absolutely.
Is it one player? Is it two? Is it this guy? Is it that guy? Is it this amount of dollars? Is it a guy in the draft? Is it both? Those things will still be debated, even if we all agree it's pass rush.
Absolutely, and that's the fun part about this. There are so many pieces to the puzzle in terms of how you can get this done. Is it, you know, like you said, how much are you spending in free agency? And in your free agent cap dollars, and how much are you spending that in your draft capital?
And where can you put that in? Yes, and we're going to keep giving you guys all the information that you need to know, too. So we're going to keep revisiting those numbers. They have $60 million in cap space. Keep revisiting those dates you have to watch for. So we'll keep you posted.
How much do they have?
$60 million. $59 million.
I got three questions.
Okay.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Bombshells last night in the world of baseball. The Red Sox trading away Mookie Betts and David Price to the Dodgers for a couple of minor leaguers. The Twins got in on that one, too. They ended up with Kenta Maeda. The Twins are definitely going for it all as well. They won 100 games last year. They had some pitching there, so good for them. But the Red Sox trading away two of their best players, two of the best players in baseball. If you look at baseball as a cycle of winning, are they essentially at the same place right now where the Mariners are? They're going to have to get young and get cheap, mm-hmm. rebuild the farm system, and then go from there.
When you make this type of move, I don't know what else you're doing. It doesn't make any sense to me at this point. I guess I need you guys to explain it to me, because people are saying, well, this Mookie Betts situation is to essentially dump salary and save
yourself. Yeah, get
yourself
under the luxury,
the luxury tax.
Save $12 million.
I'm sorry. Is $12 million that big of a deal to the Boston Red Sox that they can't afford to pay this and they can't, you know, act like the Yankees and continue to pay guys at the top and continue to keep trying to pursue World Series after World Series? Or are they, you know, very similar to every other organization in terms of financially? I guess so, I'm confused about that.
That was actually my question for you, Tom, is Jake literally just highlighted it. I was wondering, so my understanding is part of the reason the Red Sox did this isn't just to build toward the future and because maybe they aren't willing to pay Mookie Betts what he's going to look for in a year because he's still under contract, but to save money on that luxury tax. And you said they're not an organization that has to do that. So yeah, they're kind of doing it the way the Mariners are, where they're trying to get younger and cheaper, but is it kind of two different restraints where the Mariners have had to go that way and the Red Sox don't?
Well, I mean, the Mariners did everything the Red Sox did, except they didn't win.
Right.
Right? I mean, like, the Mariners got in a situation where they had, you know, they just had a bunch of players left over from the Jack Cerenzik era, where he tried to patchwork the problem with guys like Kendrys Morales and Wade Miley and Mark Trumbo and blah, blah, blah. And for a little while there, Jerry tried to win with those guys, came close, didn't work, so we had to abandon that, and now here we are. Rebuilding the farm system and going ahead with that. Now we're in year two of that. To me, the Red Sox, what they're doing now, Dave Dombrowski, their last GM, and I was talking to Shannon about this in the sports bit, he traded away everything they had in the farm system so that they could win that last World Series. and they ended up with all these great players, they had to make a choice. Do we keep on paying like the Yankees would?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The difference is the Yankees still have a good farm system.
Or do you rebuild the farm
system? Or do you rebuild? Do you go back? I mean, here's the thing. They could have kept on paying Mookie Betts and David Price and rebuilt the farm system. They just chose not to do that because they would have had to spend that much more money doing it. I mean, I can see why Red Sox fans are going to call their owners cheap today. That's not really the whole story, but you know what? It's the Red Sox. Call them cheap.
Yeah. Well, and the prospect I'm they got, the cheap. Pitching prospect was like, Curtis is busy, but I think like number 33, right? Pretty good prospect. I got to look at this. You know what?
Sure.
Throw the next one.
Question.
Number two.
The XFL kicks off in 4 days, and I find it a little bit curious. I was watching Get Up this morning, Mike Greenberg's show, and even SportsCenter before that. They had Oliver Luck, who's the commissioner of the XFL, on both shows. As I'm watching him, and I like him a lot, it occurred to me that it's a little odd. We haven't seen Vince McMahon do any interviews at all. His face and his name, except for the fact that I think he's still bankrolling most of this, has been kept out of this ordeal completely. Do you guys think that's strange?
I do think it's strange because it's unlike Vince McMahon. From everything that we know of him, he wants to be known that he's involved, that he's the face of all of it. And that's what he did the first time around. But I think that he looks at this situation and there is a sense of pride of trying to get this right this time around.
Yeah.
And hiring Oliver Luck, I think, was the greatest decision that he could have made because he can trust Oliver Luck. And I think Oliver Luck can put him in a position and say, look, to get the respect of everybody around the national media and the NFL world, we have to get this done right. We can't be a sideshow. We can't be popping off. We have to show that we can be a legitimate business, produce a legitimate product before we start, you know, really trying to get flashy with things. And I think that that has been the approach, and it's been of great restraint to Vince McMahon to sit back and play a totally different role than he's accustomed to doing.
And part of it could be separate stuff going on with the WWE that we don't quite know about yet. I know that isn't there kind of underlying rumors that this was from early February, but potentially selling the company? I don't know. This is all kind of like rumory, tabloidy things. But
yeah,
there could
McMahon's going to sell the WWE.
Well, no, but that there could be other things going on with the WWE, obviously his top priority, that might be keeping him from being as public-facing with the XFL as he might otherwise be.
Well, I think the WWE, their move to Fox has been Vince McMahon's biggest priority over the last 6 months or so. I think that debuted in October, November of last year.
Yeah, so the other things with that could be just something that he's preoccupied with.
Isn't he kind of the boss emeritus at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Aren't Stephanie and Triple H running the show?
Vince still has the final say on pretty much anything that goes on there.
But in the day-to-day?
Yeah, the day-to-day, Triple H is much more of the guy getting the deals done.
That's so funny. Hi, I'm Triple H.
Paul Levesque.
Yeah, hello, how are you?
Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Oh, my God.
So weird.
It is a little strange. I mean, I'm looking at this clip right now on YouTube of basically 20 years ago when Vince McMahon walked out to the 50-yard line and he said, "Welcome to the XFL!"
Yeah.
You know, and it was a big cartoon. It's not going to be that this time around. And I think that the fact that he's not a visual part of it loans credibility.
I think that's the right approach. I agree. Yeah. I think it's the right approach.
Next.
Number three.
All right. The premise of this question is that LeBron James is the most popular and most marketable athlete in the world. Agree?
Yes.
Just say yes. Say yes!
Okay, yes.
Okay. Is Patrick Mahomes the next LeBron James?
No.
Why?
He needs to go win another Super Bowl.
What?
If Patrick Mahomes goes and wins another Super Bowl, he will be on that same level of LeBron James.
James didn't win a championship until like 8 years into his career.
Basketball is different.
Okay.
Going behind the business of football versus basketball, like nationally and internationally in terms of being a global icon that like LeBron James is, basketball is just different from the shoes to the shorts and all of that. Football doesn't provide that same boost. And so for Patrick Mahomes, I agree that he is a marketable guy. He is a very likable guy. and has unbelievable talent. And he's going to be, like we talked about, he's the face of the NFL after the Super Bowl. But to get onto LeBron James' status, you've got to go win another Super Bowl. You've got to, you know, separate yourself in terms of now you're teetering on, is Patrick Mahomes one of the greatest of all time type of conversations for him to get on that type of level.
I do think he has to win more, but he's young. He's only 24. But one thing that I do think kind of puts him on a trajectory to be like that kind of peak marketable player is that he seems to have something intangible that people talk about, that there's something different about this kid that other people don't. And I think because he's so young still, that's still up for debate, right? Yeah. It's hard to say that about LeBron when he's been around for as long as he has, but with Patrick Mahomes, maybe he'll settle that in a couple years, but for right now, it's still up for debate. Interestingly, it's something we're going to talk about with Mike Salk when he comes in here next, is another player better than him potentially than Patrick Mahomes? Is he just as good as another player? What makes him different from a guy like Russell Wilson? Yeah. Is there something that does? But I feel like the general consensus of the league seems to be that there's something different about this kid.
I think that there is, which is why I raised the question. But there is something else that LeBron James and any NBA player has working in their favor. And Curtis, you can weigh in on this if you want. The NBA is truly a global game. Think about their interests in China and that part of the world that they have right now. I don't think the NFL, as popular as the NFL is here in America, I don't know that they have that same global reach that the NBA does. I think the NBA,
NFL?
Yeah. I think they're trying to do it, which is why we keep getting all these games in London. The Jags are playing two games there next year, actually. I don't know if Goodell's ultimate plan is to expand worldwide and have like a world league, who knows? But I think the NBA has a truly global appeal and reach that the NFL just doesn't today.
It's very true, and that's something that the NFL is trying to aspire to desperately, but it's very hard.
Maybe by the time Patrick Mahomes wins his next Super Bowl, they'll have that.
Yeah, maybe, but I guess the next other thing is, and this can be a debate between Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady's personalities, but Tom Brady, look at him. He's the greatest of all time, and I still think that he's not even on LeBron James's level in terms of marketability.
I agree.
Internationally, so Patrick Mahomes, he could develop into one of those guys, but it's going to have to be a very special career before he gets to that point.
Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, what color are you wearing there? Is that your Chiefs red?
Yeah, I noticed that earlier. You're very in a Kansas City Chiefs spirit today.
Or is that orange?
No,
it's
is,
red.
This is red.
I would call it neon red.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a bright red. It's a strong red. I would agree with
it's
that.
It's like fire engine. You know what it is?
Yeah.
It's buffalo sauce red.
But buffalo sauce is orange.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's why it looks orange.
Tom's colorblind, though.
Yeah. So, that makes a lot of sense.
Buffalo sauce is like orangey red.
Yeah.
Well, close enough. Gee whiz.
And then Tom and I on either side are wearing black. I feel like we coordinated today.
Yeah, a little bit. Cut me some slack, Jack. Sock's coming in next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And this hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. Welcome in to Mike Salk. How you doing, Mikey?
Great. What's up?
Hi.
I want to ask you a very simple question.
Okay.
Actually, it's a loaded question. You're not going to be able
not
to answer
simple
it if we had like 6 months to do it. What does Patrick Mahomes have that Russell Wilson doesn't? Go.
This is an easy question, Tom put it.
Not that much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got something.
Does he?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, he's got he's got an MVP now.
Yeah.
He's got an offense that is built that way.
Yeah, he's got something else.
What?
I don't know what it is, though.
An it factor?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I think Russell has some things that nobody else has, too. And I watched them play against each other, and I saw Russell win that game.
But why don't people care?
Well, they're the Seahawks. I mean, whatever. They're not the Kansas City Chiefs. They weren't in the first couple Super Bowls. I mean, like, you know, there's a blue-blooded factor to where Patrick... And that's not to say that Kansas City itself is an important place. There are some important people who don't even know where it is. So I don't know whether I would say that it's a location thing, but it's an old school, meaningful NFL franchise in a way that the nation will never consider the Seahawks, even though they found a way to be quite a bit in the middle of things. Unfortunately for Russell, the offense wasn't the primary factor when they won their Super Bowl, when they were at their best. It was the defense. And that's where that attention was paid.
Well, don't you think part of it might be his age, too? Because there are a couple other players that get a lot of attention. Think of the Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson, who, granted, hasn't gotten as much attention as a guy like Patrick Mahomes, but is still part of that kind of new, exciting group of young quarterbacks. How much of it is just that Russell Wilson isn't 24?
Also, Russell's talked about a lot. He's one of the celebrity quarterbacks. So what do you mean? He's married to a celebrity. Everything he does on social media is instant news, not just here, but across the sports world and into the pop culture world.
Why isn't he the face of the league then? Patrick Mahomes is.
Patrick Mahomes is the face of the league?
He's it.
I don't know whether I think that's true yet.
Yeah, oh, sure he is.
I don't think I agree with you.
But he is.
Okay, that's definite?
Yes.
Why?
It's objectively true.
I don't think it is.
It's empirically true. You can measure it.
I think more people would know who Tom Brady is, though.
I think Tom Brady
is. He's old news, man.
He's still the face of the league.
Goodbye. Brady?
Yes, of course he is. Until he's no longer in the league, Brady, I think, is still the face of the league. Mahomes is in that conversation, and so is Russell Wilson, and so is Lamar Jackson, and there'll be a couple of other guys you could probably throw in there as well. I'm not willing to say that Patrick Mahomes has any more long-term sustainable, you know, marketability and all that than Russell does. I think he's on the list. He's awesome. He's got a fun factor to watch. So does Russ. They're fun in slightly different ways. What I'm worried about with Russ is that some of what sets him apart and makes him fun is deteriorating slowly. Mm. He doesn't run as much as he used to. What did he have, 800 or some yards a few years ago? This year it was 250 running. I mean, like, he just that part of the game that adds fun isn't there as much as it used to. He's a better quarterback, right? He's better in the pocket. He does some things that he couldn't do a few years ago. But some of that, you know, sort of just fun, different factor. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes kind of has all of those things going right now. Let's have this conversation again in a year or two, and
we'll have it again tomorrow.
Let's see what a Super Bowl hangover does to him, and
Give me that ball.
All right, take the ball.
Thank you.
I've been stripped of my ball.
I'm just laughing. I'm partly laughing at that, and I'm partly laughing at someone texting in saying, "Sorry, this is Nathan Peterman's league."
That's true. It is. It's and we're all just living in it. Patrick Mahomes is awesome. I don't want to take anything away. And Tom, you're probably right. He's right there in the conversation among the guys who are vying to be the face of the league. Rather than being the face of the league, I choose to think of it as just sort of a generation thing. A few years ago, this conversation was Russell Wilson, RG3, Andrew Luck, Andy Dalton. Like, there were a few of I'm probably missing a few guys. Colin Kaepernick, we were all having those debates. And Russ outlasted most of them, right? The Matt Stafford, Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, that crew aged out of it. It's only Peyton Manning aged out and eventually left. And you're sort of left with this cool next generation. And I see them more as a group of competitors rather than one guy as the face of the league. I think what you're seeing is that the position of quarterback has changed drastically. What their job calls on them to do and the way they approach that job, the way they got to the NFL. And, yeah, one of those things is going to be the skill set they bring. And in some cases, more and more so, it's the color of their skin. I think all of those things are awesome. But the face of the NFL, I think it's becoming more of the personality of the group of guys that together are that future. They're all fairly athletic. They come oftentimes now out of spread systems. They're able to make plays and then make secondary plays after the play breaks down. And I think what Russell in some ways is the father of that. He's the guy who normalized it and made it cool. And Patrick Mahomes and certainly Lamar Jackson, the kid in Buffalo, who I don't think is that good, but he does a lot of that. What's his name?
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, He moves pretty darn well. I don't think he's as accurate as I want him to be, but he moves pretty well. Kyler Murray will I think, take some of this. I think he's going to improve. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's ever going to be as good as a few of those other guys, but I think he will improve, and there's some other folks who will be in this as well. So, Deshaun Watson, I think you got to put in that list.
I think that all these guys you're naming are the reason why Jerry Jones will not pay Dak Prescott. because he doesn't believe that Dak Prescott is any of the guys you just mentioned.
I think he is. I'd put Dak in that same category. I think Dak's awesome.
I think he is too. Problem... I don't think Jerry does.
Well, that's on Jerry. Whatever. But I should have mentioned Dak. I would put him in there. They didn't have a good year this year.
The reason why, well, they did, though. They were the number two offense in the league. That's the thing.
Yeah,
statistically. But then again, he doesn't do those other
things.
There's
an East Coast bias against the Cowboys. They don't get enough coverage in Dallas.
Not nearly enough.
There's not enough eyeballs on what the Cowboys are doing.
That's right.
Quarterback position.
Can I slip in one last question, at least for me? We have more time. But we're going to be talking throughout the day and obviously next week throughout the offseason about how the Seahawks can get back to the Super Bowl in 2020/21. Isn't the penmanship great?
It's fantastic.
Thank you. I erased it three times and restarted it.
She did, yes.
It's true. Can confirm. And each time I would do it, I think Kyle, is he back? Kyle just had just looked like a ball of stress being like, Stacey, no, we just finished it. We just took a picture of that one. It looks great. What did the Seahawks need to do? What's your top three priorities?
Top three. Number one, pass rush.
Okay.
Number two, another pass rusher.
Okay.
And then number three, it's a playmaker on defense, either at safety and corner. Those would be my top three priorities for the offseason. After that, I talked about it with you guys yesterday. I'd love to see another defensive mind brought in, whether it's replacing Ken Norton or in addition to Ken Norton. I'd like to see a creative difference maker in the coaching staff defensively. My top four would all be on defense. If I need one more after that, you always want to improve your offensive line. Always want to improve. I think their tight end position. I think there's a reason they're going to bring in, what's his name?
Greg Olsen.
Greg Olsen. Yeah. I confuse him and Kyle Rudolph. They're like very much the same person to me.
Toby Gerhart.
Toby Gerhart, yeah, from Stanford. Right. I think eventually I would get to some offensive stuff. Pass rusher, one. Pass rusher, two.
Yeah.
Playmaking safety or corner, three, and then some guys who can help you in the coaching staff defensively, four.
So let me ask you, out of those three that you mentioned, are all of those things being addressed in free agency?
No.
With their $60 million cap?
They don't have to be, but some of them do.
So I would agree with you in terms of, those two pass rushers that you're talking about. I want those guys to be from free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I want those guys to be guys proven, can step in. They've got a track record. They're not coming off injury. These are top tier guys.
Mm-hmm.
The secondary guy that you're talking about, if they ever went in that direction, to me, that's got to be a young draftable guy that I think that they've got other holes or other things they've got
to
address.
Then I'd love to see them trade up for that. If you need to get a playmaking corner or safety, that's something you can get in the 10 to 14 range, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go trade up for that. Go get that guy in the draft and let him come in and do his thing. And, yeah, you're right. Go get your pass rushers in free agency. Get two of them. And then after that, you'll fill in the blanks. But I think, honestly, if they could get two legitimate pass rushers in free agency, and obviously Clowney, that might be in addition to Clowney.
Yeah.
And
you could get it done.
I think they could. And then take your first couple draft picks, trade up in some way, and make sure you get a playmaking secondary play, whether it's a safety or a corner. Think about how much better you are next year.
30 seconds on what the Red Sox did last night?
Salary dumping? It seems so strange, right? I mean, it's a salary dump, clear as day. It doesn't seem like them. I'm going to bet it's a short-term thing. I don't see John Henry getting out of the spending money business. I don't see him as being able to handle it long-term in Boston, not spending money. They've done this a couple of times where they've looked at where they're at, not been happy, sent away salary, and then put it back on and added it the next year. Could they be taking it down to the studs a little bit for a year? Yeah, but I don't see this as like a sea change in the way the Red Sox are going
to
operate.
They do still have to rebuild their farm system to some extent, and they probably want to find or develop the next core players that they have of superstars. But I agree, they're not going to stop spending money.
Not going to happen.
They're not going to like sink to last place 68 wins on purpose.
I was bummed to see Joc Pederson go to the Angels, though. That's a guy, I know that you're not like in the market for a player to help you right now, but I just hate seeing good players, fun young players like that, go to the competition here in the AL West. So that just bummed me out.
They still don't really have any pitching, though.
They do not, but I can still be jealous because I'd like to have Joc Pederson.
Sure. Are the Red Sox doing the same thing the Mariners are doing? We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
The Red Sox went nuts last night. Can we just agree on that?
Yeah, I think that is
Do you think there was any,
an accurate statement?
Do you think there was any drinking involved in all these maneuvers last night between the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Twins?
I think I'd like to think so.
The Twins were the sober party hanging out. They're like, you know what? We're a starting pitcher away from probably going to the World Series. Can you just give us Kenta Maeda? Okay, man, you can have Kenta Maeda. There you go. And then the Red Sox are like, oh, yeah, man, you want Mookie Betts out of here. Just take him.
Just take him.
Hold on.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it felt like last night. They just went crazy. And by the way, we're asking this question about the Seahawks. What's our question of the offseason? It's how do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020? They're already a playoff team. They're already a very good team, a team that is maybe a couple of plays away from getting to the Super Bowl. With the Dodgers making this move, getting David Price and Mookie Betts, one of the best pitchers in baseball and one of the best players, this is already a team that won 106 games.
Right.
Right? So this is their version of getting to the World Series and winning it. They're sick of getting there and not winning it. It's kind of, I mean, it's not the exact same situation that the Seahawks are in, but they're both very good teams who are looking to add important impact pieces to finally get back to the top of the mountain, a place they haven't been in a while. But as we look at what the Red Sox are doing here, they're stripping it down to some degree. They're not spending right now, neither are the Mariners. They're looking at their farm system, which they're going to have to revamp completely. So did the Mariners. It feels like the Mariners are just a step or two ahead of where the Red Sox are right now. And like Mike said, don't let anybody kid you. The Red Sox will spend when they have to.
Yeah.
They've got money that the Mariners don't. Okay, I'm not going to try and make it sound like the Red Sox are behind the Mariners,
mm-hmm.
but they're kind of taking a similar approach right now. They have to. They want to get younger. They want to get cheaper. That's the Mariners' mantra.
It is interesting from that standpoint because they also are in a different spot. Like when Salt came in and talked about the Boston Red Sox and their philosophy, they're not going to tear it. I can't imagine they're truly going to tear it down to the studs.
They don't have to tear it down.
Right. And they're going to rebuild this thing up back in a season or so. Is Mookie Betts really the guy that you wanted to get rid of to build that whole thing up? Is there another Mookie Betts that you just feel like you can acquire and they're going to be able to solve the problem right away? I mean,
maybe they feel like they don't need Mookie Betts. See, this is the thing about baseball. Maybe you don't need the best player or the one of the five best players to win a World Series. Like, if you're in the NBA, you're not winning the title unless you have one of the
top five players
in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not. In football, similar. You need one of the top five quarterbacks, probably, or like a top defense or something
right.
like that. Baseball, I'm just not convinced that there is a formula where it works that way with a guy like Mookie Betts.
But sometimes that can come back to bite you, right? Like, who knows if the Red Sox will be one of those teams that says, well, we've been so successful. Like, who's to say we need Mookie Betts? We've won without him, and we're a great franchise. We know what we're doing. But then you're maybe not attributing enough credit to the stars that you've had and a little too much credit to the way that you think you can build a team.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not. If you look at the Red Sox championships, each one of them has been built a different way. The first one was patched together with a bunch of veterans saying, let's win now. The second one was a little bit more homegrown. The 2013 was kind of patched together again. The last one was spent on and grown. It was a combination. But in building that last championship team, their farm system was raided. They traded away all those players. So now they have to go back and they have to rebuild that again. I think that they're feeling like, all right, as long as we have to do that, we might as well get under the luxury tax now.
Right.
Trade these players away so that, you know, in a couple of years, we're not having to pay them that much more again.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can also get the best prospects
for them back right now. I mean, it makes sense on paper. I understand Red Sox fans probably being upset with it. But, I mean, you know, you look at what the Mariners are doing right now. If you look at this as a big circle, like you start at the teardown and then you go all the way around 180 degrees where you win the World Series. And then you get past that where you have to start dumping players here and there. The point at which you decide to sell off your players and the point at which you're kind of where the Mariners are the same. They're almost one and the same.
The difference being the Mariners haven't won. They haven't won. And it feels a lot more like instead of a winning cycle, you've just kind of been in like like a cyclone just spinning down down.
Like a shame spiral.
Purgatory for basically 19 years.
Yeah, exactly. You've just been in the middle.
And then there are teams like the Yankees who will never get on that cycle at all because
they'll
always have a good farm system and they'll always be willing to spend money.
But will they have beards? No.
No,
something
they will
to think
not.
About.
And as my dad says, that's what makes them champions, Tommy.
Exactly.
And the critique here is obviously you're looking at this from a short-sighted standpoint in the sense that you feel like they could win now, they could continue to win, and they could probably continue to spend. It would not kill or cripple this franchise for them to do that. They are very much capable of doing that. But as you pointed out to me, they don't operate like that. The Red Sox are different in terms of they don't want to spend all of that money all the time like the Yankees every single year. They are they have different values in terms of how to build their team. And I think that's very interesting in terms of looking at the situation, knowing that, look, you have the gall to walk away from one of the best players in baseball and say, yeah, this is the best move for our organization and not be afraid of that. That's pretty powerful if they're able to pull it off and continue to win. That, to me, would say a lot.
What's the football equivalent of that? Is that like the Chiefs walking away from Mahomes now?
Yeah. What it would have been like? It would have been like for the Los Angeles Rams to walk away from Jared Goff. For them to sit there and Sean McVay to say, you know what? This offense has been about me. Mm. It's about our organization and my play calling and the pieces that I have around my quarterback. I can coach any young quarterback to hand the ball off to Todd Gurley and get them into the right checks and reads. And instead, I think they were afraid and wanted to go with something comfortable instead of saying, look, Jared Goff next year is going to have a $36 million cap hit to the Los Angeles Rams. And where does that put us as a franchise? So I think that would be your comparison. Keeping Jared Goff is the safe thing to do, and it would go against every single trend in the NFL. But I think the Rams potentially could have been in a better situation had they done that.
And meanwhile, a team that's great on defense and has everything but maybe that franchise quarterback just picked up Jared Goff. And I kind of want them to go to a World Series.
Or a Super Bowl, you mean?
No, the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I was likening a team like that to the Dodgers.
Got
like
it.
Mookie Betts is their Jared Goff. Is that what you're saying?
I think Mookie Betts is better.
Hey, you talk about for the Dodgers?
Yeah.
Stacy's analogy there. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's a key piece that now they have it. All of a sudden you're like, ooh.
I said the thing is I don't know that that's actually going to be the key. I don't know that in baseball there's a such thing as a key piece, but we'll come back and we'll talk about that later. I asked Mike before.
In our next segment, whose baseball is Jared Goff?
No. What does Patrick Mahomes have that Russell does not, if anything? Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.